Join me and my friend Greg Love of Robot Invader as we discuss his Steam game Seeing Things and its inclusion in Steam Next Fest, including a bunch of tips you can use for your own games.
You're listening to Make the Game with Matt Hackett.
Greg Love, thanks so much for being here, man. It has been a minute. How are you?
Hey, Matt. I am doing well. Always nice to see you. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure, dude. Great to see you. You know, so we have podcasted before. I got it pulled up right here. Lostcast 66, Love and Marketing. Would you believe that was in 2014?
Oof. 10 years ago. Yikes.
10 years ago. Just shy of 10 years. That's unbelievable.
That's no joke. Number one, can I say that is a fantastic title for the podcast episode there, Matt.
Love and Marketing.
So, oh, that's off to you. I mean, yeah.
You have an amazing name, Greg Love. I mean, Love. How can you go wrong? Mine comes up a lot, Matt Hackett. I get the hacking, the hacker. You can hack the code and like, okay, that's pretty good. But yours has like no notes, no editing necessary. Just there it is. But yeah, we met a long time ago. Oh yeah, we met a long time ago. I think it was like it was some conference in San Francisco. I think it was like a mobile gaming conference or something. And we were showing off. I think it was a Wizard's Lizard way back in the day, and we kind of hit it off. I believe that you we worked together as a publisher developer for a spell, and that led to the podcast. So I will put a link to that in the show notes if anyone would like to continue to hear. Greg and I just discuss games and all kinds of other stuff. And that also includes our mutual friend, Jeff Blair. And so,
Jeff.
Jeff. Yes, indeed.
Jeff. Yes.
That was a fun episode. But a lot has happened since then. And these days, you are at a company called Robot Invader. I would love to hear about what you got going on at Robot Invader, my friend.
Yeah, sure thing. So Robot Invader, we're a small company, and we do two things. We make a no-code 2D game engine called Story Machine, and then we make games on that engine. Story Machine is a somewhat newer endeavor for the company. The company's actually been around since 2012, we've shipped 11 titles to date. So in the early days of the company, it was heavily mobile-focused. And they had some early mobile hits, Wind Up Night, Wind Up Night 2, and Rise of the Blobs. Then the company started focusing on console and PC market and VR, and had an early VR hit called Dead Secret. And at the same time I was working with you and Jeff on A Wizard's Lizard and Soul Thief, I started working with Robot Invader on taking Dead Secret and the sequel Dead Secret Circle to market. And then we stayed in touch, and then they started building out Story Machine a couple years ago. And I joined the team full-time early last year to help take the games to market and help take Story Machine to market, and also just doing sort of all operations associated with the business. I'm the only non-artist, engineer, designer on the team.
Very cool. Well, that's you add an important piece to the puzzle, right? I've talked before how like I work with a lot of engineers, and sometimes I use the analogy of peanut butter and peanut butter. Like Jeff Blair and I are almost like the same person. So when we were working at Lost Decade Games together, it was a little bit like peanut butter and peanut butter. And what you want is like peanut butter and jelly, or peanut butter and chocolate, my personal favorite. Like when I go for a dessert, it's like a Reese's cheesecake or something like that's what I go for. So yeah, your skills are, from my experience on the engineering side, rare and very valuable. So they're lucky to have you.
Story Machine. I'll remember that. And maybe get that sound bite that I can play for him later on.
You're welcome to it. Yeah, slice that out, put it in your bio, whatever you like. You can quote me on that. So Story Machine is a really interesting product, and it's led to you cranking out some games. And we're going to get to that is the game that it's created, and also you recently put it into Steam Next Fest, which has been on my mind a lot recently. Can you elaborate further on Story Machine and what you got going on with that?
Yeah, so the thesis around Story Machine is, a couple years ago before Chris and Casey, who founded Robot Invader, when Casey was thinking about really like, what's the next game we want to make after Dead Secret Circle? Every game, Dead Secret Circle and the games before that were and all of Robot Invader's library were made with Unity. And Unity does a whole lot. And I know Unity's been really trashed. And, you know, they've had a rough sort of PR year, to say the least. That's right.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't want to, like, you know, like, keep harping on them in that regard by any means. But, like, just generally, there was two things that happened. I think the team was fed up with how Unity as a tool had evolved. And then coupled with the types of games that the team wanted to create were much more story and sort of how to best evoke feelings as opposed to sort of, you know, like 3D graphics or more sort of high fidelity graphics, for example. Mm-hmm. And so the studio was like, well, I think we really want to focus on making 2D games. And so when you look at Unity broadly and all the sort of issues that the studio had with Unity up until that point with 3D games, and then as a shift to moving to 2D, Unity is less focused on the 2D tooling to really help sort of accelerate and fine-tune 2D games. And so that was the origins of Story Machine, is when you look at it and you look at any 2D engines out there, there's an opportunity to create a fine-tuned 2D game engine that is specialized in just 2D, just for, and initially we're just focusing on narrative games. And so we really want to own that audience before we go out and support different genres. And the idea that, you know, there's a number of engines out there. There's a lot of game engines, and it's still like a lot of studios are using their own custom game engines today. But there's just nothing on the market that we felt, and back then Casey and Chris felt, had actually sort of fit the same type of, or solved the same type of problem that, you know, going back a little ways, but like Flash was doing a decade and a half ago, or even go back way further than that, like a macro media. So the idea that there's sort of like an accessible game engine, but that's widely sort of, and that's where the no code part comes in critically. So an accessible game engine, but deep. So as you learn the tooling, you can still create any type of deep 2D experience that you would like to put out. That's kind of the origin of the thesis of the company. And so I think I mentioned this earlier, but like the engine started development in the engine started in earnest about a year and a half ago, and then we just took it to private beta about 7 months ago. Folks who were interested, and we really were targeting indie developers who have shipped a lot of games, or excuse me, not a lot of games, but have just shipped 2D games that we thought were a really good fit for where Story Machine was back then and is still currently on itch.io and Steam. And then come in and say like, okay, what are you using today? Are you using Unity? Are you using Game Maker? Are you using Godot or something like that? And here's sort of the value prop of Story Machine. Use it. It's free right now. All we're looking for is just feedback. And so that's where the product is right now, is it's still in beta, private beta. We're likely to launch into a 1.0 in a few months. And we've just been able to get a whole host of helpful feedback, and it's gone right into the engineering roadmap. And I think we are marching towards that 1.0 release in the not too distant future. But that's sort of the short of it, is that like if you're looking to actually make a 2D game, the hope is that for particular genres today, like Story Machine answers that better than any other product out on the market. And then going forward, it will sort of be the default 2D game engine on the market.
Love it. I'm hearing a lot of things I like. Obviously, putting games on Steam. I think it's cool that you mentioned Itch. And a lot of game devs who make games on Itch, like me, do tend to focus on 2D games, which is like That's my heart. You can see in the background here. All these games are 2D. These are all like Game Boy games, like some of my all-time classic favorites. I also think it's interesting that you mentioned no code, because like I myself am I'm primarily a 2D game developer, right? But here it comes, folks. Here's my book, How to Make a Video Game All by Yourself. I mentioned it. When you mentioned no code, it's one of the things I say in my book is I think that like the most common reason that people think they can't make games is they're like, I don't understand it, or I don't want to code, right? And so, you know, no code has been an option for a while now. And so to see you integrate that, I think you hit nailed in the head. It's accessible, right? You can bring it to I see this a lot, is a lot of people want to tell stories. And then they see like that, I want to tell a story, but I would like to do it in the medium of games instead of like writing a short story or a comic or something. And the problem they hit is that code is like, I would like to write a story for a game. Well, read this C++ book, and it's 1,000 pages long. And they're like, and they really think it's not an option for them. But yeah, it sounds like Story Machine could help fill that gap. You also mentioned Flash games. I still don't feel like I've seen something really kind of check that box for around the ActionScript 3 time, when Adobe just like, that product was unbelievably good. We didn't know how good we had it back then, did we?
That's right.
Keyframes and vector-based graphics, and ActionScript 3 was actually pretty accessible as far as programming goes. I know it's not for, like, I'm a programmer, I love programming, but it's not for everybody. But very cool. Story Machine. I think at the end of the show, we're going to talk about where everybody can follow that. Like, I'm subscribed to your newsletter, so I get updates on Story Machine, and we'll tell everybody where we can do that. But correct me if I'm wrong, but you have cranked out a game or two using this tool, Story Machine, correct? And I think maybe I'm happy to, if you want to talk about if there's multiple projects, but the most recent one that I actually played and had a good time playing was Seeing Things.
Yeah. Thank you for testing that out. That was helpful. Helpful feedback to go to see somebody play the game, not knowing anything about it and not knowing anything of the genre. It was very helpful. So thank you, Matt. But yeah. We've shipped one game on. So I guess just one step back. We, as a studio, we will. I think I may have mentioned this, but in addition to Story Machine, we are going forward just making games using Story Machine. And so we shipped the first game with Story Machine called Beacon's Bluff on Steam, Itch, and the Epic Game Store in last summer, so summer of 2023. And the goal for that game was just a proof of concept, just to say, hey, can the engine actually support a game with the type of art and the gameplay, even if it's just a smaller slice or a smaller experience that that we envision, where and it's also a player, does it work on these various storefronts? So as a proof of concept, and then also really helping spur the development of Story Machine to help support the various aspects of what went into the game, that was the main value for Beacon's Bluff. So we didn't have any commercial aspirations for Beacon's Bluff. So we didn't do any marketing. We didn't do any lead up. It was just, we shipped it on Steam. We were one of the, like, what is the crazy number now? Like 14,500 games that launched on Steam last year.
Went into the
ether, which is sort of like what we expected. We did have a number of like sort of streamers pick it up and play it, which was cool to see. But again, no commercial aspirations, and we didn't do any marketing or anything in earnest.
You're doing it right. That's what I suggest to people, is to get started with, just put it out there. Don't expect too much. Just like get the ball rolling. So I think you did exactly the right thing. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's a bit of an interesting place for us, because we are sort of relaunching our organizational muscle around putting games on Steam, because it's been so long for us. You know, like, we put out Dead Secret in 2015 on Steam, and then Dead Secret Circle 2018 on Steam. And so we've had a gap, and there's certainly some things that are still true on how to launch and be successful on Steam, but a whole lot has changed, namely the amount of games that are available, and also sort of how Steam visibility works. And so, like, I think one of the tenets of the company is, and this is one of the things that Story Machine really enables, is it allows us to crank out games that hit our quality bar at a fairly accelerated rate. And so one of the tenets of the company is we want to really get into a habit of shipping games that we feel are fun, look great, hit our quality bar, but do so in a pretty regular clip. So like, you know, this might be aggressive, but like, you know, two a year or something like that. So we'll see how that goes. But right now we're marching towards that. We've got our second game that you played, and we just launched on Steam Next, where you participated in Steam Next Fest, called Seeing Things. Going through that whole event was one of the other key, I think, points for us, is we just wanted to, like, that's an important festival, it seems, on Steam.
Yes.
And we wanted to make sure, like, hey, going forward, we really need to sort of experience this and just get our foot in the door and just, like, try to learn as much as we can during the event, before the event, and after the event.
Good for you. Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that gap because with Lost Decade Games, which you and I have some history with, as anyone can go listen to that podcast I mentioned, we launched a Wizard's Lizard in 2014, and then I launched Indie Game Sim in 2016, which 2 years is not terrible. That's okay. Like, the two games a year that you're talking about would be great. I would love that if I could actually find a way to hit that mark. When I podcasted with Chris Sukowski on Steam Marketing Gold, he suggested 3 games a year, and I'm like, how do you do that? And I've been talking to publishers. Yeah, I mean, it's possible other people do it. I've been talking to publishers recently, and they, you know, they're curious about other Steam games I made, and I'm like, well, yeah, I made these games, and then I'm like, an Indie Game Sim in 2016, and we're in 2020, so I'm like, okay, I just need to acknowledge that time is a flat circle and has no meaning and it's flying by faster every day, but that is 8 years. That's 8 years, right? And back then there was no Steam Next Fest, and it went from, you know, Steam Next Fest doesn't exist to now Steam Next Fest is a critical component. Like, I honestly feel it'd be a little irresponsible to launch a game without going through it. You're just leaving money on the table. It is an opportunity to get eyeballs in your demo, to collect wish lists. And it wasn't even a piece of the puzzle last time I launched a game on Steam, right? So I'm kind of trying to get back to where you're already at, where you're trying to fill that gap, find a you know, steady cadence for releasing games. So I'm trying to crawl my way back there. But I played your game Seeing Things, and you had prepared a demo for Steam Next Fest. And I'm really excited to talk about how that went for you, because you know, my plan was to get Pixel Washer into Steam Next Fest. I didn't quite hit that mark. And I'm also, like, since talking to publishers, I think that they know the value. Like a publisher worth their salt knows how important Steam Next Fest is, and I'm sure that they'd want to be involved. And so you know, I'm sure indie developers, not everybody knows this, you can participate in one. And this is not true for other Steam Fests. And it feels like every year there's more Steam Fests going on. There's like a turn-based fest and a roguelike fest and a horror fest. Right. And, you know, if you have a game that can fit, you know, a really diverse game with a lot going on, like Undertale could be considered a dating sim in some ways. And obviously it's a role-playing game or whatever, but your game can be in all of those fests, to my knowledge, but not Next Fest. Steam Next Fest, you get one. And the advice, again, with Chris Dukowski, I first heard this advice, is to you choose the Next Fest that's closest to your game's launch. And there's even a strategy where you launch immediately to kind of get that momentum, almost like a, you know, a satellite using the gravity of Jupiter to launch itself farther out into the solar system. Sorry, I've been watching lots of space videos recently, right? But you kind of want to use that momentum as that excitement. You know, people see your game on Steam, and so to launch shortly after that makes a lot of sense. But the point being that, like, you know, what you don't want is you don't want to, say, participate in the February, like you did, Next Fest, and then a year goes by, and there's been two or three more Next Fests, and your game still isn't launched. I'm sure it happens. Everybody's, you know, everybody pushes their release date. It's kind of natural, but that's not ideal, right? So I would love to hear how it went for you, because Seeing Things, you participated in Steam Next Fest, and I think we just this week ended that. I think it was last week ended. Was it Tuesday of this week? So how did Seeing Things in Steam Next Fest go for you?
Yeah. So I think I'll answer that. I do think it's helpful to dive in a little bit to what you said about like what the ideal scenario is for Steamfest. And there's not kind of wide agreement about this across the industry. But I think generally you're right. Like if and also Steamfest Next Fest is I think changing in some regards, like namely like how many games are launching. So, you know, like what we say here may not be true next year or whatnot. But at least like the lay of the land today, I think broadly that's right. Like you want to have the you want to have your game participate in Next Fest as close to the launch of your game as possible. And you want to have it perhaps almost as, you know, this is for indie developers. If you're like a AAA developer, this may not apply because you've got a lot more marketing options. But you want to have it as one of the key marketing beats that's sort of powering up to your launch of the game. You want to have had already a decent amount of momentum on Steam. And you get that by way of like, you know, already having a demo and making that available to streamers, you know, press a little bit here and there, but basically Twitch and YouTube is how you want to go that. So you want to do that before you actually launch on Next Fest. So why do you want to do that? Well, the idea is that you have a bit of momentum. You've already gained some wish lists, some visibility. So by the time that you actually launch on Next Fest, you are even in a higher visibility area, and the festival is just that much more beneficial for you by way of visibility. And why is visibility important? Well, that adds to wish lists for your game.
Great tips.
So I mentioned all sort of like some of the like, you know, perhaps ideal ways to go about this, because that's not what we did here.
Hey.
Yeah, that's right. So our goals were a little bit different. And I think one of the constraining factors for us is like our game, like we're able to produce our games fairly quickly. And so like our game is going to launch before the next Fest, which is I think in June of next year.
Yes.
And so like with Story Machine, I think we mentioned this, but like, so we, Casey, who's our game designer, is building everything in Story Machine, and he has no engineering background, and he's able to like produce really high quality stuff very quickly. And so that's great, because we're going to be able to launch Seeing Things probably in April. It may slip to May, we'll see. But that's going to happen before the next Fest. And so our main goals for Next Fest were sort of three. Number one is we wanted to finalize our demo. Like we wanted to get a demo, and we needed to get a high quality demo that showed the hooks and enough gameplay to sort of whet people's appetite for the main game. And by people, I mean mainly those folks on, you know, YouTube and Twitch streamers. The second one, I'd mentioned this before, but we just wanted to build sort of an organizational muscle around Next Fest, as it's an important event to be successful on Steam. Mm-hmm. And then the third goal was like, well, just positive impact to visibility and by way of wish list increase specifically. And so how it went, so let's hit each one. Like the demo, number one, great to get that out. Like we got it out, we got a nice playable slice of the game that you provided helpful feedback with.
I played it and had a good time, yeah.
Yes, thank you, Matt. Thank you again. And that was good. And the reason why is that number one in priority? Because for our game and like where we are at as a studio, we're solely betting on the fact that we're going to take that demo, independent of Steamfest, to be clear, and go and solicit YouTubers and folks on Twitch to play the game, and then drive visibility to our Steam page and get that on and convert those visits to wish lists. Hopefully.
Love it.
And the reason why we're sort of doing that is Seeing Things tends to be a game that does well with streamers. So I haven't even mentioned what Seeing Things is, but Seeing Things is a surveillance horror game. So what that means is you command a surveillance camera across various locations, and you spot the differences of anomalies that pop up in those various locations. So if any listener or viewer has played the I'm on Observation Duty games, it's that genre that game sort of started.
Would you say like a Five Nights at Freddy's fan might enjoy seeing things? That
yes,
fair?
Yeah,
I haven't played those games either. Because like, to be fair, I'm not a horror game fan particularly. I'm way too much of a baby. My wife has some funny stories about me trying to play my brother. He worked on Dead Space, and I'm just a little crybaby when it comes to horror games. And I'm also not much of a puzzle game or spot the difference player. So I'm not your target market, but I am a fan of you and your work. And so I'm happy to play your game, and I felt like it was well crafted, and I had a good time playing it. But it's not in my normal wheelhouse, to be fair to everyone. But I know that those genres, like horror especially, but like definitely puzzle games and the spot the difference games and just, you know, really beautiful games do very well on Steam, and like horror especially, like Steam loves horror games. So I feel like it's you're like the fans are out there, and I feel like it's a good fit for Steam.
Yeah. That's our hope. I think we're fans of this genre. Five Nights at Freddy's is a little different in that it tends to focus, and I haven't played these games in some time, but it tends to focus a little bit more on sort of like jump scares and whatnot.
Jump scares.
This is more around sort of like a feeling of like, yeah, there's horror elements.
Like dread.
Sure.
It had good atmosphere.
It's much more atmospheric and tied to dread.
But unsettled.
Streamers, that's right. And that's the hope. Unsettled in a good way.
Yes, exactly. Desire
is the hope. Yeah.
Yeah.
But streamers love these games because they tend to be really good content. Whether you're recording a video for YouTube and you're just one person making a video, or if you're like playing the game with your channel on Twitch and you're asking the channel for help.
I could have used that.
It tends to be. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, I saw the Matt nicely recorded a video of his playthrough, and you could tell he hadn't played these games before. But
yeah, I need help. And a chat. Honestly, like for a streamer, I think chat would be perfect, because I know some streamers like don't help me, and that's totally fine. But like, I think I would be the more like I grew up playing, you know, the internet didn't exist when I was playing these, you know, Super Nintendo games and stuff. And so like, I'm used to someone being on the couch next to me, and they'd be like, you know, like, I don't want to get stuck in a Zelda puzzle. I want a friend to be like, have you tried throwing that pot there? And I'm like, well, thank you. Like, I don't like, I, you know, I, so I think it's a perfect game for someone to stream if they really want chat to help them out. I think that'd be ideal for seeing things.
Yeah, that's right. And so that's kind of what we wanted to get a demo in a good enough state, because like our prospects for this game is really Next Fest was a very nice to have. Like where we are at as a studio and where Seeing Things In is right now, like we're much more tied to like a our key success will be outside of Next Fest. Mm-hmm. And that will be by way of like actually taking this demo once it's fine tuned and going after streamers and Twitch. But to actually like get the demo out was like, again, the number one priority, and we got there. Number two was like build that organizational muscle, which I already mentioned. Part of that too, as you know, Matt, like you need to make sure your Steam page is in a state that has the highest likelihood of converting a user to actually like downloading your demo in this case. Yeah. So we did a lot of work around like our Steam capsule, our short description, which we feel really good about. One of the things we didn't get to, which we would have liked to, is actually updating the trailer. Right now we just have a teaser trailer that has like kind of hidden gameplay, but we want to actually have a trailer that has gameplay. And so that's actually the prerequisite right now for us to get in place before we go and solicit YouTubers and streamers, is we want to have an updated trailer on there. But just generally, like going through this experience was like very helpful. Having never done it before, like I think there were 1,100 or like 1,150 games or something like that that participated in Next Fest.
Yeah.
It's like this crazy, crazy number. And it's just like, it's sort of indicative of Steam generally, right? And so like, yeah, you we didn't do any marketing ahead of time. Like I mentioned the sort of the goals, but like going out and finding out like, oh, hey, where does your game appear? Like where does Steam sort of decide to pimp out your capsule image based on what's happening? How many demo players are we actually getting? Like what's just happening organically? was a good experience. And then lastly, as I mentioned, third goal, visibility. So number one, we got a lot more game, like store impressions than we've ever had by far. It was like,
nice.
Jumped up from like nothing to like 11,000 at like 12,000 at its peak or something like that. And then wish lists, we went from nothing to having over 600 right now. So like 600, like not like, you know, we want to get to that 7,000 plus number before we launch in a few months here. And, you know, like 600, it's a good dent because we went from like nothing to 600 without, so that's all just sort of positive. But again, our sort of main focus at this point is like, how are we actually going to increase wish lists, or we'll actually get really good signal on if we think Seeing Things is going to be a game that like will resonate on Steam as well as we think it will over the next like month and a half, because we're going to go and actually solicit the demo in a meaningful way to YouTubers and streamers. So we'll see how it goes. But that was all great. We also had so those were the three goals, and then two things happened that were actually unexpected benefits. One was player feedback. So we actually got pretty helpful feedback. Like the guys on the team are pretty opinionated about like what this game is and like and what it isn't. And so like I'm sharing all this stuff, and Casey in particular knows like what he wants to do, Casey on the team. But there's been helpful feedback. It's like, oh, that's a good point. Like we didn't think of that, and that fits with our vision of the game, so we're gonna incorporate that. An example there being like, you don't get penalized. Like if you think something is an anomaly on the screen, there is a penalty today in the game, but it's like fairly light. And I think there's a much more sort of impactful way to make that penalty fit in a way that makes the game more fun, which is like sort of a weird thing to say about a penalty, but we made that change in the game, and
makes sense,
and we'll update it. And then the second is we got streamers to pick up the game, including a number of notable streamers that will be really helpful, I think, as we go and include them on the list to reach out. They weren't on our list before, they're on our list now. The one bummer there is this demo was not made for streamers, which like we knew, like, oh hey, like maybe it'll get picked up, but like it starts like the demo has like an easy and a medium mode for this one particular level, and then hard is left for the full game. But like if you're a streamer that has played these games, like easy is going to be pretty easy for you. If you haven't played these games but have a large Twitch audience, and we saw this, like you use your audience. So like we had one Twitch person playing, and they've got like hundreds of people on their chat, and they're just like, let me know, chat, like this room's called, you know, the entrance, this room's called Dinosaur Museum, like let me know if you see something. And so like you have, instead of one set of eyeballs, you've got, you know, hundreds.
Nice.
So one of our main tweaks for the demo is that it's going to be the higher difficulties are just going to be made available right from the onset. And that should be a better fit for the streamers.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, like I kind of wish I had streamers there, or even just you to like nudge me in the right direction, because I'm not a normal player of these games, so I was probably particularly bad at it. I've got a couple things to mention that you brought up. For one, as you moving forward are going to focus on your trailer. I don't know if you've listened to it, but definitely a nudge for anyone listening to this is to check out my podcast with Derek Liu, Making Great Game Trailers with Derek Liu. Highly recommend that. I mean, for all I know, you're just going to hire someone to do it for you, but...
we're not going to hire someone, and I did listen to the episode, Matt.
Yes! Okay, there it is. There it is, listeners. Go listen to the podcast. Right. Derek Liu is a fountain of information about how to make... good game trailers. And also Derek is on TikTok, and he's just got, again, just a fountain, just so many amazing TikToks on how his process of making game trailers. And you know, game trailers are really important. Like a lot of players, they'll just skip straight to the screenshots, or they will kind of skim through your trailer, but the trailer has the ability to jump out of your Steam page even and end up on YouTube or somewhere else, right? Here's a point too I wanted to bring up is what's interesting, like as you're massaging, you and I talk about optimizing our Steam pages a lot. We kind of discuss like, do you like this description or should I change these words or whatever? And this trend I've noticed, especially with, as you mentioned, you know, how many 14,000 games on Steam, there's this new trend where you don't want every player, right? And so like when players land on the Seeing Things Steam page, you want to turn a certain amount of them away, because if they don't like atmospheric games, if they don't like 2D games, you don't want those players. Like, you don't want them to come in and play it and be like, they played for that hour and a half and they hit refund and they give you a negative review. That's kind of worst case scenario. And the fact that like Seeing Things doesn't currently have jump scares, and that might be like an expectation, it might be worth saying that explicitly is like, do not expect jump scares, right? Because there's common things where like, you know, if you say you that you're making like a survival game, people might expect certain things like crafting. And if you're making a game that's kind of minimalist, doesn't have crafting, players want to know that, because if you're not hitting that player expectation, you need to say like, hey, our game's different, you know? And that's a tip that like, it's unintuitive, because it's like, I want to turn people away from my game. Like, I want everyone to come in. No, you really don't. Like, the world is too big these days, and you really want to like niche down on just the people who are really going to love your game.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Is how do you like basically at every turn, from your marketing to your copy, how do you position your game such that you're actually targeting the audience that you're that's going to be a fit for your game?
Exactly right. Yeah,
that's like the beautiful thing at Steam is like there's all these beautiful all these users. So you have theoretically you have access to all those users. The real challenge is like how do you go out and actually find those users that are going to be a fit for your game, and you know, positioning and the marketing of your page is a key bit for that.
Yeah, exactly right. There's one feature of Steam Next Fest I was going to ask you about. Did you and your team do the? There's like a live stream thing. I'm a little confused by it, because again, I've never participated in Steam Next Fest, which is one reason I'm very interested in Steam Next Fest, is because when I finally do enter into it, I want to put my best foot forward, right? So, so what you can do apparently is you can go through their system and like request, I think, a couple of slots to do live streams, and you can live stream, and they recommend that you actually do a live stream. But also, that's quite demanding on almost any team's time, is to be like, you know, hey, Tuesday and Thursday, I need you to stream gameplay for 8 hours or whatever it is. And so a common thing is, you know, we've got great tools these days. You can set up a stream, you can record it ahead of time, or you could even recruit like a streamer or YouTuber. You said you got some pickup people playing your games. You can, you know, as a video record that, and then you can have it, you know, tell Steam servers, hey, here's that stream coming in, but it's really just a pre-recording. And I see that I got checked out Steam Next Fest. I definitely did not see it on every game, but I'd see it on some. And the advice from Steam is to do everything. Of course, they want you to use their feature. Like, they wouldn't have done all the work to build out these features if they didn't want you to use them and think that it was advisable to use them. So is that something you did, or did you skip that part of Steam Next Fest?
So I should have mentioned this in the other sort of ideal way to approach Next Fest, and another one that we opted not to do, specifically just because it's so taxing. I think if we were properly making this like a serious marketing beat, then absolutely, like we would have done it. And I would recommend anybody who's like really going out there and having like we had the goals that I mentioned earlier, but like if we wanted like a proper Next Fest leverage marketing beat, like absolutely do this. The one thing we did notice, I should say, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. You can live stream, and that's what I thought it was. I thought that was the only option. During Next Fest, I learned that you could actually do the recording, and then I think it is just two slots. So like, had I known that we could have done the recording, like maybe. It still probably would have been a no, but maybe. The live stream was definitely the one that was just like, all right, that's gonna be too much, and the juice won't be worth the squeeze. The amount of live streams that they have at any one time is also bonkers. Like, so there's a whole strategy to go in to say like, hey, do we want to live stream when the highest number of Steam users are on the platform?
Yeah.
And that way we get like the, you know, the highest chance of getting the most eyeballs, or do we want to, go at a different time during the day where there aren't as many Steam users, but therefore there's lower competition amongst the devs who are live streaming. And then everything in between. But yeah, like when I would just be checking throughout the day, you would have like, I don't know, like 60-ish live streams going on. And, wow. You know, the top one would have a couple thousand viewers, maybe more. And then the bottom one would still have something, but it's like, you know, six to 10 or something like that. So it's just like, it, like Steam broadly, it is just a, how do you break through from a visibility standpoint? And that's true for NextFest, and that's true for this live stream feature specifically.
Yeah, I have seen confusion around the feature, and it sounds like on the surface a big commitment. I'm not surprised when anyone kind of opts out of like, and like, I don't, as a Steam user, I know I'm not a typical Steam user. I'm a dev, and so it's not fair to look at my behavior. But the moment I go to any page that has that, I instantly close it because it's like noisy. And sometimes I've even noticed it overlaps with the Steam trailer, which, you know, I think you can change the settings, but by default, that'll play. And I'm just like, get out of here. Like, yeah. I know because Steam tells us that it's good to have, and I'm sure some players want to see it, and then maybe that makes them more likely to buy the game or wishlist it or something. But it's a bit of a turnoff to me, and I've found it very confusing how best to do it, what the content should even look like. It's a big ask. It's got a nebulous payoff, and then like you were saying, like when do you even? They've got this huge calendar with so much competition. The advice that I've seen is the advice that I kind of see, which is universal, at least for, you know, tiny indies like me, which is to go at the less trafficked time. Like, you don't want to compete with, like, there's always like, you know, 3 to 5 Steam Next Fest games that just win. They win Steam Next Fest. They get 80% of all players and wishlists. You don't want to stream or just compete with them, right? Because you'll be so far below the fold. If someone, you know, Steam Next Fest is blasted on Steam's homepage. That's what's so big about it, is that whole, I don't know about the whole week, but definitely when it starts, Steam Next Fest, and you got Steam's whatever, you know, 200,000 people per hour. I don't even know what the numbers are, but like, they're clicking, right. People are going, there's a fire hose going to Steam Next Fest. But if you're page 4 down, page 6, 10 down, no one's going to see it anyway. So that's the advice that I've seen, but like, it's a big ask, right? Like so many variables, and you kind of wonder to yourself, like, is this time better spent just improving my Steam page?
Right.
Improving the demo itself. Like, you know, there's so many things you could spend your time on. And that one has seemed like a strange one to me, that feature.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. So I guess that leads me to what is next? Is it it sounds like you're seeing things launch is coming up later this year. But like, what's next for Robot Invader? Is it the excitement about seeing things? Is it the, do you have the next game cooking in the works, or like what's the next thing on your plate?
Yeah. No, we're still definitely focused on getting seeing things finalized. So our plan before Next Fest was to participate in the festival, and then two or three weeks after Next Fest ended, start going out to YouTubers and streamers with the demo, and also importantly before then updating our trailer with gameplay. So that's still the plan, except we now have some good user and streamer feedback. So it may take us a little bit longer than like 2 to 3 weeks after, but who knows? I think the nice thing about sort of our development cycle is like those changes are not coming at the expense of like where we are currently with finalizing the other part of the game. That's more sort of art heavy right now. And so we're not delaying the April or May launch. And so that's basically our plan but we have a little bit more valuable feedback to go with, which has been really helpful. I will say, like, I don't think we really would have caught, like, if we didn't participate in Next Fest, I don't know if we would have caught the tweak we needed in difficulty to go after the streamers. And that would have come at a real expense, I think, because I think we probably would have gotten a few videos from the folks that we think are a great fit for this genre, and we think are really going to dig the game, and then realize like, oh, this is too easy. or we need to unlock these various hard levels like immediately for these folks, and then had to go in and like quickly make that change and like maybe have lost opportunity with other streamers that we went out and pitched at that point. So I want to like, you know, who knows, but like right now I think it's very valuable that we got that player and streamer feedback from NextFest.
Yeah, for sure. I mentioned a strategy earlier where you launched like almost immediately after Steam NextFest, but what it sounds like to me is some good advice is, you know, you're going to get, like you did, a bunch of feedback from NextFest. You're going to get new players coming in, you know, running your game on new computers. And so your team needs some time to respond to that, right? And, you know, feedback, you don't always just want to do what players say you should do. You want to digest the feedback, and you might, like, they ask for A, but you end up implementing C, which solves A, but it's not what they asked for, but you solve it a different way, right? And fixing bugs and stuff. So what it sounds like to me is would be the good strategy is don't launch directly after Steam Next Fest. Like, give yourself and your team some time to respond to that and to like tweak the build, like, and as you were saying, like gear it towards success with streamers and YouTubers, fix the bugs, iron out this or that, respond to the feedback. So that sounds like the good strategy to me, is at least give yourself some breathing room between that big Steam Next Fest event, and then, you know, it would be great if there were time to crank out another build or two to respond to the feedback and whatnot.
Totally, that's a great point. I also think it may be beneficial to wait a little bit. I haven't quite thought about this as much, so I haven't ironed this out, so this is pretty raw, but curious to get your take. I think you're also like, if the strategy today is for everybody to like release their game a month and a half after NextFest, like that's okay, then you're going to be like, that's a good pool of games that are launching right around that time, particularly if these games perform well on NextFest. And so that was one of the reasons why. So anyway, I think it may make sense to not launch, like maybe there's a month gap or like I don't know what that is. Like I said, it's kind of raw, but I think there's something there where like, if your plan is to launch next week or something like that, perhaps there's a flood of these like top 10 games that have a similar plan. So something to consider. The other bit is, and we were chatting about this, but there's conflicting opinions about this too, but like, do you leave your demo, like how long do you leave your demo up after NextFest? So some are like, oh yeah, 2 weeks, because streamers are still going to be like going in, or players are going to be still hearing about NextFest somehow and going in and grabbing your demo. Others, and this is the route we're going to take, is we're just leaving our demo up until the release of our game, or like, you know, a couple of weeks before the game. So we'll see how that goes. But that's something I think that's also helpful in learning as we go through this. It's like, what's that optimal time in terms of demo? It seems to, in demo availability, it seems to me like having that available longer, there's much more upside. But I suppose if you're one of these like top 10 games, you know, upcoming and top 10 games based on performance in NextFest, then maybe there's a good strategy to take it down earlier. But for us, we're keeping it up because the upside just seems pretty clear.
That's a great question. That comes up in the Vladria Discord quite a bit, is, you know, when should you put your demo up? How long should you keep it up? And then especially, should you keep it up after Steam NextFest? And I think you're totally right, is, you know, we're living in a post, you know, Steam is open now. Like back in the day, one could argue, let's say you've got a game on Steam and Steam is super closed ecosystem. And so someone looks at your game page and they're like, oh, I want to check out this game, but it's, you know, $5 or $20 or whatever. And maybe I want to wait for a sale or whatever. And if there's a demo, they might so much as download your demo and never play it. And that scratches the itch, or play it one time and that scratches the itch, and they're never going to buy it, right? But post the Steam being open, anyone can put a game up on Steam. Post the world where it's more important to get streamers and YouTubers, like that is the key, right? To get your game to be successful is to get YouTubers and streamers to play it. It makes the most sense to keep your demo up at all times. Is all the advice. And like, again, I don't have my experience is pretty dated at this point, but I research a lot, podcast a lot, talk to a lot of people about this. What it sounds like to me is you want to have your demo up as early as you can. And you do want to keep it up because, you know, maybe someone will download it and they, no, it's not for them, and you lose them. They unwishlist it or whatever. But that pales in comparison to, you know, almost like the fishing pole. You just keep it in the water. If your demo is up there, you might get a streamer randomly plays it, and that gets it to an audience of 1,000. You might get a YouTuber who plays your demo that gets it to an audience of 100,000, right? And so that's the advice that I've seen is, yes, keep your demo up. And to help kind of alleviate that pain, or to give another strategy on top of having your demo up and keeping it up there and maybe feeling like it gets stale or something, I think you and I discussed this a little bit in Discord, but there's really no reason you can't have multiple demos, right?
Yeah.
It's never been easier to crank out a new version of your game. Like you were saying, it makes the most sense for seeing things to have the max difficulty up on your demo, because that's more streamer friendly from your strategy, right? So you can have a Steam demo separate from your Steam Next Fest demo, separate from after Steam Next Fest. You could have your February 2024 demo, right? And so once I get my demo up for Pixel Washer, my strategy is I'm going to have a bunch of different demos, and I'm going to have like Steam demo. I'm going to have, that's different. And these are all different builds. Different versions of them will be like different levels can be included, maybe even different features, right? I will have an itch like web-based demo. And then what that feels like is you can't then send like an exclusive version to streamers or YouTubers to get them interested. Like, hey, I sent this thing just to you. It's not even available online. You can't even get this on Steam. Like if your Steam demo's up, it feels like you can't do that. Yes, you can. Because you can be like, this is the YouTube exclusive demo. You could even be like, you could focus on it. I don't know, like Splattercat or somebody, like the Wholesome Game. You could be like, this, I will do this with Pixel Washer. I hope my listeners remember and call me out on this if I don't do it. Here's the Wholesome Games Pixel Washer demo or build. Here is the Cozy Games Pixel Washer demo, right? And it's easy for me to do that. Change what the levels are. I can easily add some text that says what the demo is underneath there. Again, I'm not an expert, and maybe someone who's been on Steam for years and has made millions of dollars could tell me all the reasons that I'm wrong or something. But just based on everything that I see and my content pipeline workflow and all this stuff, it makes the most sense to me. Get your demo up as early as possible. Mine's been up on itch for ages. I've been collecting player feedback. I've been collecting praise for the game that I put in my pitch decks. There's all kinds of benefits I've had from putting my web demo up on itch early. And it's really just on me. Like I've been meaning, it's been on my list. You know how it is. I've been meaning to get my demo up for Pixel Washer on Steam. And if I could snap my fingers and it was done, I would have it done today. And I think those would even be two different builds. Here's my web itch demo and here's my Steam demo. And if I was entering into Steam Next Fest, I'd be like, here's my Steam Next Fest demo. And after that, I would take that down but keep the demo up. And now it's the, you know, August 2028 demo. However right, far in the right. future that is. So that's kind of my long-winded thing is like, I wouldn't be precious with demos. I would keep them up, hope to get streamers, hope to get YouTubers. And there's really no reason that you can't whip up new demos. That's my long-winded thought on
yeah,
that
no, no. subject. A couple points there. Did you end up putting it on itch first versus Steam for any reason other than it's just much easier to get it out on
no.
itch?
Absolutely no reason. So my game is written in JavaScript and it is a web game. And so I can just go boop. And Jeff Blair, yes. We mentioned the early that we podcasted with, he showed me how to set up GitHub Actions so that I can literally just push to GitHub and then the GitHub Actions kick in and I automatically blast that build to itch. And so I did the thumb. I don't know if this is going to show up in the video or not, but Apple did that weird thumb, or maybe it was Zoom. Anyway. Showed the thumbs up on the screen, but that's the reason. And down the road, like it's, you know, it's hard to make estimates. I think it would honestly take me a week or two to get that build pipeline, everything working, to have those builds sent to Steam and get it on, I don't know, like hopefully Steam Deck but definitely Windows and all that. But it really was just the ease for me. I was like, I can blast this demo up on itch in 2 seconds, whereas to get it on Steam will take some doing for me. Once it's done, it's done. But that's the only reason I held back on that. So if you've got, you know, if you have a pipeline, I do suggest you get your Steam demo for anybody. I suggest you get your Steam demo up ASAP, and there's no reason you can't update it or change the name or whatever.
And I to further that point, for our next, so for the third game built on Story Machine, so Beacon's Bluff was number one, Seeing Things number two, and then for our third game, that is, it's incredibly early. So, who knows? But like one of our tenets of that is like we're going to be getting a demo out very soon. Like that's a for Seeing Things, we had the store page out. But like I mentioned, we didn't get the demo. We had the store page out early. I think we launched the store page in maybe November or October. But we just didn't get the demo out till right before Next Fest. And so we're really going to be circling around the idea of like the value of the demo as soon as possible for game number three.
Nice.
And then to your other point about like different versions of demos. Yep. Like we'll be able to hopefully provide you some feedback here in the not too distant future, because the demo that we're taking to streamers is going to be different than the demo that's available on Steam. And it will be like a streamer version, or hopefully we can create a better name than that, but it'll be something like that. Like Seeing Things Streamer. Yeah.
Yeah. Terrifying edition, you know.
That's right.
That's great. So I suggest to all of our listeners and watchers, please do go wishlist Seeing Things and Beacon's Bluff if they sound interesting to you. You can also follow Robot Invader on Steam. And Greg, for you, is there anywhere else or where else should our listeners follow you in your work if they would like to do so?
Yeah. So if you go to either robotinvader.com or trystorymachine.com, you can sign up for our newsletter there. We're also on Twitter/X at Robot Invader, at Story Machine Dev. So please check those out too. And happy to answer any additional questions, whether it's like broad stuff about sort of how we're approaching Steam or anything specific with Seeing Things and Next Fest. I will say to anybody, like Beacon's Bluff, proof of concept game, if it looks interesting, just hit me up either on email or social. I'm happy to send you a Steam key to get that out, because it's a fun little game, but it is definitely a little game where Seeing Things, it's much more sort of a proper game that we have at least some commercial aspirations towards.
Nice. And no joke, everybody, reach out to Greg if you are curious about any of this stuff or just want to know about games marketing. It couldn't be a nicer person to talk to in the world. It's always such a pleasure talking to you, dude. Thanks so much for being here today. I really appreciate it.
Hey, you too, Matt. And thank you for all the help and advice on stuff from copy to playing the demo leading up to Next Fest. Appreciate it, sir.
Anytime, my man. Anytime. Did you want an early version to listen to, or should I just blast it up?
No, just do your thing, man. No worries. Right. No worries. Yeah. No need to do a version just for me, my friend. No need for a special demo version.
Oh, you brought it back. A special podcast build just for Greg.